Today in our ongoing Ideas Matter check-in with the Public Humanities series, we bring you two outstanding public humanists, and we are going to discuss the idea of Christmas as one feasting holiday, among others, enjoyed as a religious and not-so-religious holiday by many. We are talking about Christmas's role in our culture. Joining us, both from the Culinary Institute in Hyde Park, New York, are Beth Forrest, Associate Professor of Liberal Arts, and Deirdre Murphy, who is Professor of Liberal Arts. Beth and Deirdre, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
A delight. So give us an idea of how you came to these idea of looking at our image of Christmas in this country.
Well, I think it comes from a number of different ideas. We both are interested in the construction of culture, how it's created and how it's used, how it can be taken apart by subcultures, and how the continuation of memory plays into how we view what is happening, you know, every year and the continuation of it.
And I would add to that, you know, everything that Beth Forrest just said, but also I love Dickens' A Christmas Carol.
Yeah.
And that was my project for my honors thesis when I was an undergrad. So I do come to this as a fan as well, frankly. So it's both things together. And I think that both of those perspectives together, the critical one and also the pure pleasure aspect, if you put those together, I think you get a really good sense of how it is that we can all look at Christmas, or how it is that people in the humanities would ask us to consider Christmas. And it's this idea of inventing tradition and then messing with it both at the same time.
Like the whole idea of messing with it, yes. And we have to find our traditions, right? I mean, that is, and through the passage of time and through our maturation process, we are, as you scientifically put it, messing with it, but we're also finding our place as a culture and as an individual.
Well, and I think that is part of the joy of holidays, is that they're frequently quite flexible. And so you can bring in modern ideas. You can also bring in multicultural ideas. So if, as my colleague Deirdre reminded me, I'm such a Yankee, in my traditional practices of making traditional dishes and going Christmas caroling on Christmas Eve and being invited into people's house and sharing in a banquet after you sing a song. But there's, you know, along with that, there's the Hispanic tradition of making tamales on Christmas as part of a communal activity and sharing. And of course, there's the newer tradition of Jews going out and having Chinese or sushi on Christmas. So we, you know, we don't even have to celebrate Christmas in a sense to still have a tradition that happens on Christmas, which I think, again, shows our flexibility and multiculturalism in today and how we can, again, mess with traditions.
You know, Beth, you mentioned something a moment ago that I wanted to get back to, and it was a key word. No, it's a key word that I just want to explore a little bit more, and that's memory. Of what a great part memory plays in this. Memory, nostalgia, tradition.
Actually, this is Deirdre. Can I actually respond to that?
Take that ball and whack it out of the park.
Well, in 1843, Charles Dickens already did, so I'm just tossing the ball along. But, you know, this idea of memory, that too is even constructed. When Dickens wrote A Christmas Carol and he featured the second of his three visitors on one cold winter's night who brought him these visions of superabundance of food and family tradition and light and warmth, Dickens was rescuing that because that really wasn't what Christmas looked like in Great Britain. In the mid-19th century. Actually, Dickens got those ideas from a New York native named Washington Irving, who first wrote about them in the sketchbook in 1819.
I think you can also talk about memory with regard to holidays in that they're sensory overload. And our memories are triggered by sensory experience. And that becomes an important. So the smell of Christmas cookies or the smell of roasting turkey is going to remind us of what happened in years before and align the current with the past as this reoccurring memory that becomes a collective within a social group.
Can we ask you a question?
Yes.
What did you have for Christmas last year, if you had Christmas dinner? Or what are you going to have this year?
We're
going to
have the same thing this year that we had last year, which was a standing rib roast on a grilled on a kettle grill outside. And my father-in-law will cook it, and hopefully, as tradition, as it, you know, it's much more fun when there's a good foot of snow on the ground.
But if you can see just your choice of food, it's two things. That one, it's out of the, it's not something you have every day, so it plays into the idea of ritual,
right,
as importance. And then the foods that we tend to choose are foods that aren't individual, so you need a whole group in order to consume them.
Absolutely.
So there's a reason that we don't all have steak on a Christmas, that instead,
right,
we have a big roast that is meant for a group.
We're not serving hot pockets.
Well, not that we would judge somebody.
No, hot pockets, are your thing? Just, you could use some hand warmers, actually.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, you know, they'd be like roasted chestnuts, perhaps. The modern invention of that. But what's also interesting, I think, that Beth just mentioned, is this idea that Christmas feasts are things that you need a group for.
Right.
You need to harness a lot of labor there. While she was saying that, I was thinking, oh, that's a lot of protein. And if you think about this, what you're revisiting, really, whether you're aware of it or not, are some of the earliest traditions associated with midwinter, and that's the Boar's Head feast.
Yeah.
So Boar's Head isn't just a sliced sandwich meat. It's a tradition that goes back to Yule, to pagan Europe, where the boar's head is brought in on a platter, and it's wreathed with bay leaves and rosemary, and there's like some fruit stuffed in its mouth, probably an apple.
Yeah.
And so you're redoing that. But what's so interesting about...
Well, we don't really have the decapitation.
What's that?
We don't have the decapitation. That's already happened before. Well, we could.
You could.
It's a free country, certainly. Yes?
Okay. And if decapitation's your thing, yeah.
And we see during the Restoration in England, a Christmas feast of roughly just shy of 40 dishes being served, most of which are protein. And what's interesting about that, which Deirdre and I were talking about, is this is happening in the dead of winter, mm-hmm, when you have to wonder if you're going to have more food. It's when the larder is going bare.
Yeah.
And here you are with this overabundance, gluttonous feast, which really speaks to a much larger idea of your place in the world and the seasons.
Yeah. And if we could ask people to consider one thing, or it's maybe help us understand the thing we've been thinking about lately, is this idea of how do holiday celebrations or holiday feasts like Christmas contain ideas of faith? And, you know, there are books that have been written about Christmas called, you know, the Nissenbaum's The Battle for Christmas, for instance.
Yeah.
And everyone fights over what faith means, or, you know, debates it during this season. And if you look at our very earliest traditions, there's something very bold about the idea of faith here. You're having a sumptuous feast, as Beth just said, at probably the most fragile time of the year for that. That is an incredible expression of faith in humanity. It's basically saying, we're going to make it, you know, no matter what, we're going,
right,
to make it till the next springtime, until the next harvest. So this really isn't like Thanksgiving. It's there's something that's a bit more, yeah, definitely bold about it, I would say.
Well, bold.
Sorry.
No, I mean, and a bit more celebratory, correct? I mean, it seems where Thanksgiving is very much about the meal itself, and it's very family, very family centered. But a holiday feast, when you're getting together, and in many cases, this is the first time you've seen your relatives in a long time, perhaps since the Christmas prior, that there is that celebratory aspect.
Absolutely, but I think one slight difference between Thanksgiving and Christmas is Thanksgiving is celebrating the past, the harvest that already happened.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Whereas Christmas is celebrating both the past as well as what,
mm-hmm,
is to come.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, continues the memory of the past but the promise of the future.
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about your family, it's very much tied to the concept of commensality,
mm-hmm,
that that relationships are forged, or stronger relationships are forged, over the breaking of bread.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so that's not just a celebration of your family in the past, but of the future of your family and the values that you all choose to embrace together.
So most of that is done unconsciously, I would assume, from what you just described. For most of us, we just have the dinner and we do it out of tradition and ritual and necessity. And I'm curious for you in the humanities of how you encourage us to help make that connection of the past and help make that connection of what came for us so we can be for us so we can give it more of a context.
Oh, geez, that's a huge question.
You have 3 minutes.
One idea I keep thinking about, yeah, okay, so making sense of this, right? Let's return to this idea of mischief and this idea of connecting with a past. And I would say that this is really
Were we talking about mischief?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we are.
Well, I'm very excited. I missed the mischief quotient. Okay, go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to break in with the mischief. Think about it. All year round, we're supposed to be fairly conscious of what we are eating, of what we're putting into our body, of that we're working hard. And then here we have this period whereby all of those rules go out of the window for a set context of time. You can eat without guilt.
I see.
Whatever you want. You can
eat,
you can feast on, you know, rum punch and candy canes, and you're not going to be judged. So it reinforces those rules that happen outside of this time.
Okay, I see the mischief you're talking about. So okay.
I mean, think about it, right? We're talking about mischief, and I think that's very different from subversion. You know, mischief is like, let's see, how can we make a drink with eggs and milk that can be so strong with alcohol that we can light it on fire? And once it's flaming, let's try drinking it. You know, so when we say mischief, we mean mischievous in this way. But at the same time, if, you know, Christmas is all about celebrating the past and family traditions and larger traditions, you know, there's also an encouragement to kick back, to relax from work, to take time off and not go outside and do the hard work of farming or nation building. It's pretty much saying, you know, sit back by a fire in your socks and drink as much alcohol as you can hold and then hit the protein. And, you know, in addition to that, right, that was actually formally made part of Christmas traditions throughout Europe. You might have a lord of misrule, and social structures would be overturned, so servants were put in charge for a day and masters of the house would be made to do their bidding for a short time. For Dickens, he talks about Fezziwig's Ball, where a young clerk, Scrooge, actually turns out to be a really good dancer. The problem with Scrooge when he gets older is he forgets that he really likes to dance, he loves music, and food tastes good. So it encourages all the things that we love to do that we know we're not supposed to do.
Well, it is it's a lot of fun talking about these subjects, and of course it helps put us, again, give it a context and keep things in mind as we celebrate over the next several days. Deirdre Murphy is a professor of liberal arts, Beth Forrest, and associate professor of liberal arts, both teaching at the Culinary Institute of America in Hyde Park, New York. Thank you both for being with us. Have a wonderful Merry Christmas and a wonderful holiday season.
Thank you. Same to you.
Thank
Merry
you
Christmas,
so much.
Happy holidays. Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.